This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you, Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
Pete's here, like he is all throughout the season, as he has been for multiple years. We're going to talk about last night. We're going to talk about the rest of this series. Jim is on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Hello, my friend, Shams Charania, with the initial report that Steph Curry out for Thursday, now extending it to he will be reevaluated in a week. So a week from today is potentially game five at Target Center. Then you have Thursday, Friday, Saturday off. And then you have game six if it takes place that Sunday. I think that's the most realistic option. And I want to say this, and I said this in a text, but I want to say it on air. In the playoffs, when the Wolves play a full 48-minute game against the Golden State Warriors without Steph Curry, they shouldn't lose a single time. Agree or disagree?
Disagree.
Okay. They're a 500 team if he doesn't play.
I don't know. You know, guys have a way of stepping up in big moments. And, you know, Brandon Pozemski, I mean, he did not play well in that game. He's got a lot of game, and he's a guy. I mean, I just know that, you know, first of all, the Timberwolves have not always performed well when teams fit undermanned.
Yeah, true.
And so it's been one of those things where, you know, I don't know if it's just a psychological thing, if you think that, you know, we're good, you know, they're good, their big guns are out. So, you know, it's something that historically this team has not been, it's not a slam dunk. I mean, the game we lost against Indiana, the game we lost against Washington, there's so many games where teams were undermanned and Wolves didn't perform. So I'm just going to say stay prepared and redouble your efforts against the guys who have a chance of hurting you. And Buddy Hield is a guy that can shoot the basketball, and he can get on hot streaks, and he certainly was in game one. And then Pozemski, I mean, he was 1 of 7 in the game, Chad. And then Moses Moody has – you know, an opportunity as the others that can come and hurt you. That he was 0 for 4 in that game. They've got other guys that can play. Kuminga came in and did a nice job. I mean, Steve Kerr did a really nice job of utilizing guys. And, you know, he comes from that Greg Popovich, you know, coaching tree. And you think about Pop and how he would just, Chad, how often would Pop just change starting lineups? And
yep.
He would have no problem
experiment a lot.
Mixing and matching. So when it came down to a playoff situation where you had an injury, you had guys that were confident and were able to step up. So I'm just saying, like, you know, they were rather nonchalant with Buddy Hield in that game, and especially in the second half when they could have, you know, redoubled and Steph wasn't there. They really kind of let him loose a little bit. So I'm not saying that you're not right in terms of Steph Curry and what the impact he has and the gravity he has on the floor, but I'm just saying Steve Kerr, his coaching ability, and these guys, I think Jimmy Butler gives them a backbone and another guy that can control the game, as he did in the fourth quarter of that game. He accounted for all 19 of those points.
He was like a quarterback. He controlled the pace. He controlled everything. I am not trying to downplay Jimmy Butler's brilliance. Again, he's a giant pain in the ass off the floor. He implodes places when he leaves. He's athletically clearly diminished, but God, he's a smart player. So is Draymond. And I'm not suggesting the Wolves should just roll the ball out, but I'm saying until the Warriors acquire Jimmy Butler, they were 25-26. They were one game below 500. And Steph Curry is more essential to that team. And I just think it is a remarkable opportunity in an unfortunate way. Right? But this is sports. Strange things happen. Curry, who always gets the ankle stuff, now out of nowhere gets a hamstring. I just think if they would lose this series before Curry comes back, it would be an enormous missed opportunity. Enormous.
Well, there's no doubt. And so I'm just saying, you know, I think that Chris Finch and the coaching staff, they're going to do the right things in terms of preparing them. And I just know watching practice and shoot around, the amount of time they spent on all the chase actions that they run with Steph Curry. And, you know,
they're fun to watch.
Any post-up opportunity for a big. And now Jimmy Butler adds a little different wrinkle because they've never had, Chad, when they run that split action.
Yep.
And they've run it for years. They ran it with Clay. They ran it with Steph.
Sure.
The big that sets that in screen, and they come off that split. And, you know, the guy slips to the basket who set the screen, and Steph's coming over, Clay did. And by the way, they run that same action with Buddy Hield as well. They've never really had a guy that gets the ball in the post that can do something with it. Jimmy Butler is one of those guys. They feed him in that action. And Jimmy's one of those guys that, they're running splits, and they're occupying – you know, two defenders in that split action. But Jimmy's a guy that can go to work down there. And so one of the things the Wolves did to counter that, and I think this is really kind of, this is the brilliance of Chris Finch and his coaching staff, is that they worked on, you know, trying to, and they did it last night, they were fronting the post. Some of the shot clock violations they had were because Minnesota did a great job of not allowing that post feed, because that's the key to running the split actions. And so Nikhil was fronting when he was guarding Jimmy. Other guys were fronting, and it caused some confusion. So Jimmy adds a different wrinkle in that part of it. And then also any kind of action where a big is out on the floor and he catches the basketball, it's only – and Draymond's the main guy, but also Kevon Looney, when they're standing there at the three-point line with the basketball, they're not going to do anything but hand it off to some shooter that's coming off for a handoff. So one thing I'm telling you that is – you know, from a relief standpoint, are all the guys that have to chase Steph Curry around the floor, they're going to be a lot happier not having to do that.
That's correct.
For however many games that Steph's not going to be there for. So from that standpoint, yes. Now Jaden McDaniels and Nikhil Alexander-Walker, and to the extent Chris Finch will go with, you know, Jalen Clark or, you know, Terrence Shannon Jr. or whatever, they've got so many guys that can chase. Now they've got to redouble their efforts, Chad, and try to take away Buddy Hield, try to take Brandon Pozemski away, to try to
Jimmy.
See what they can, and Jimmy Butler as well. So
top of the list.
So it's one more guy that you can not have to worry about from that standpoint, having to chase them all over the floor.
Okay, let's pause. Let's come back. Let's talk about historically atrocious shooting from the Wolves, and let's talk about Chris Finch going after his star. Not timid in any way going after Anthony Edwards postgame. See what Jim has to say about it. Jim Peterson with us as he is all throughout the year, certainly right here in the middle of the second round of the playoffs with the Warriors winning 99-88 last night and game two tomorrow night at Target Center. That's about a 7:40 or so start. I'm going to talk about Stretch Lab. I'm going to talk about a place I believe in. I'm going to talk about when I'm not stretching enough at home. I can feel it when I go to Stretch Lab, and Stretch Lab makes me feel better. Now, it's smart to not just only stretch when you go to Stretch Lab. You're allowed to do it on your own time, but you're not going to have the professionals. You're not going to have the experience. You're not going to have the expertise. You're not going to have all the unique positions that you'll get at Stretch Lab, and you can check out the locations, 11 of them in the metro area, at stretchlab.com. They have 25-minute sessions. They have 50-minute sessions. This run of weather, there are plenty of people out there who are playing golf. There are plenty of people out there who haven't played any golf during the winter, and their bodies aren't moving that real well. Go to Stretch Lab and then go play and see that driver going 5, 10 yards further. See that 7-iron that's going about a half club further. If you're a runner and you come away sore, go to Stretch Lab. You'll feel a little bit better. I believe in it. I've been a customer for 6 years. StretchLab.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back with Pete. Let's get to Anthony Edwards, and then we'll get to the shooting. Chris Finch, Jim Peterson knows this much better than I, but Chris Finch is one of those coaches who does not run and hide from criticizing his star players. There are too many coaches who've done that for a long time, who when something goes bad and when their star player really is the reason why it went bad, they start screaming at somebody else, and that's chicken bleep, in my opinion. And Finch has that, and by the way, Anthony Edwards allows that to happen. And Ant couldn't make a shot, and Chris felt like he had predetermined how he was going to play. And so then there was a follow-up from a reporter during the press scrum saying, do you feel like you need to talk to Ant about it? And here's what Chris said.
You mentioned kind of the energy, the spirit starts with Ant. Is that something that you and he talk about maybe ahead of game two now?
What is there to talk about? I mean, you're the leader of the team, and you got to come out and set the tone, you know, in all ways that happens. And if your shot's not going, like you still have to carry the energy, you know. So if I got to talk to guys about having the right energy coming into opening second round game, then, you know, we're not on the same page. So.
I love that 0 to 10, a 10. Saying what he should say. Why do you think Chris was as agitated as he was regarding Ant in particular?
You know, part of it, I don't know exactly. You know, I think that Finchie's all about accountability, and he's been this way since he came. That's why when he first came, the way that he ran practice and the way that he, the things that we could see, those of us that are allowed to come to practice, and, you know, it's a privilege to have that ability, Chad, as you know, because over our times with, you know, you were there for so long, and I've been here for 27 years, and there have been coaches that have, mm-hmm. had the sensibility to not let you come in and see what goes on.
Yep.
And Chris Finch is the ultimate open book. And if you talk to him, will tell you exactly what's going on. He's not, you know, mincing words, and he's not parsing his opinions with stuff. He tells you exactly. That's why we all love him so much. And the fact that he's talking to coaches like in video sessions, and players will tell you too. Like
Pete, hang on just a second. I'm gonna put you on hold, and Dave's just gonna tell you the phone was flawless the first segment. And then it's just breaking up a little. I know we can understand, Jim, but we want it just a smidge better clarity, because this is key part. You know, when you have a coach who's not afraid to call out his player who was not up to standard, he just was not. You have, you know, Ant and his poor shooting in the first game. Excuse me, in the last game of the Lakers series. Then you have his poor shooting. The shooting is one thing. This is more than shooting when Chris Finch is calling him out. We're going to get to the shooting in a second, because 12 for 76, three-point shooting in back-to-back playoff games, that's never happened before. That is historically all-time. So, yeah, now I'm sure we have a better connection now. Just continue to expand on Finch and his willingness to address this, and also Edwards willing to take it in the right context, as opposed to pouting and saying, who are you to call me out?
Well, it's part and parcel why we love both of them so much, because Ant is willing to be coached and Finchie is willing to coach them, and he coaches everybody so hard. And you know, he doesn't call players out very much in post games. You know, he doesn't call them on individually, but you know, Ant didn't have great energy, Chad. I thought in game 5 against the Lakers, like his energy was not great. And so this goes back to game 5, and Finchie knows that all these games are so meaningful that you can't take a game off. And so Ant, just rewatching the game again, he didn't have, I don't know, that same flair. You know, he's such a contagious player, and just the look on his face was not the same. It's, you know, and so the vantage point that we have, like, we're broadcasting now since we're up, like, it's hard to kind of see some of that up close, but when you rewatch it, you see his face on TV. And so he just doesn't want any of that to happen. So it's very important for him to be able to be honest, and for players to understand where he's coming from. So trust me, you know, there have been coaches that we've had and I've had as a player who don't always tell you exactly what they feel. And like what you were saying is true. Like, there are coaches that don't get on star athletes. And Chris Finch is just, he just is so good in that regard. That's why I have so much confidence that they can turn this thing around, and why I don't get too upset about this game one. I know that the percentages for teams that win game one in a playoff series, especially if you're the road team and you flip the home court advantage, you know, they win over 70% of the time. If you win game one, you're going to win the series. So you're bucking that trend, but all you got to do is come back and just play the way you need to play in game two, and then level this thing up and then go from there. So Steph being out definitely, you know, helps the equation of bucking that trend
a lot.
But Finchie doesn't want to let this thing linger any more than it does.
No, that's true.
The shooting for these last two games, it's just not who they are. So I just think that, you know, the tide is going to turn, and you just got to stay positive and not make too much. And that's really the brilliance of Chris Finch too, is that, you know, he doesn't get too low. You know, he stays tried and true to his coaching philosophy, and it's not a mixed message. Guys are clear on what their role is. If you're open, you shoot it, and you can't make too much of it, because it tends to make those things linger more than it should.
Just one more Steph thing. If Chris Finch was honestly asked, you can have this scenario. You win game one, but Steph Curry is going to keep playing, or you lose game one and Steph Curry is out for at least the next three games and maybe the series, I think in his heart of hearts, he would absolutely take no Steph Curry. Vegas has reflected that. The Wolves are heavier favorites now than they were with the start of the series, and I concur. Let's get to some sloppiness not associated just with the shooting. The Warriors had 18 offensive rebounds last night. Give me a break. I mean, Jimmy had 7 of them. And I get that Butler and Green are incredible players with their guile and their intellect and their fundamentals. But come on. 18 offensive rebounds against a team which is significantly smaller and slighter than you. That is being true to your core, and that is also just getting outworked by the other team.
Yeah, it was, you know, and you talk about winning the possession battle. It's one of Chris Finch's, you know, big things that he talks about game in and game out is winning that possession battle. And so it just was evident when you watched that game, they were losing the 50-50 ball challenge. And that's yes. a battle you have to win. It was the key to them beating the Lakers. And, you know, and there were so many things the Wolves did so great. They won all the miscellaneous points battles. You think about, you know, fast break points off turnovers. You think about winning the second chance points, the free throwing battle. You know, one of the keys that they did a great job of, and you know, the Warriors didn't shoot a tremendous. I mean, what did they? They shot 15 free throws in that game. So, you know, you defended without fouling for the most part. You know, they just got to keep winning those battles. I got to tell you one thing they did too. It's such an important fact that Chris Finch and his staff spent so much time working on transition defense. It was huge in that Lakers series, keeping them out of transition. It's one of the big things with this Warriors team because they're so good at in transition, those walk-up threes that they hit all the time, and Steph's a big part of that, obviously. You know, they worked on transition defense a ton for this series, so getting matched up. And I just think having a sense of urgency. And so, you know, mm-hmm. like I say, you know, when it comes to closing out to three-point shooters, you got to be on guard. And so, I don't know, I think
that's why Chris was mad, that attention to detail.
Yeah, yes,
when you're now in May,
yeah,
you're in the second round. I mean, there were moments where it was preseason-like, you know, and they just – that's what has to infuriate him. And I get that teams are used to playing – every other day, and we've watched it all over the place, and all we've seen is visitors win, and the league is a bit of a crapshoot. But if they play their normal game, and they get Dante and Nod to stop playing terrible, by the way, and they just get the normal performances, they win this series. But the idea that, and again, I'm saying they shouldn't lose without Steph. But the idea that Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, and Steve Kerr aren't going to say, bleep everybody who thinks we're done because we have been winners our whole life and we're going to be again, it's just there. An opening has become a veil to them. But if they don't play the right way, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if Steph's playing.
Yeah, and so I just, you know, just being around this team, I've been around a lot of teams, and this is the most connected group, like even more than last year, I think, in a lot of ways. But from the front office, I just was talking to some people about this yesterday at Shoot Around, like from Tim Connelly and his entire staff, Matt Lloyd, Del Demps, Manny Rojan, like all the front office people, Steve Senior, all these people, all the people that are around the team, the training staff. It's just a connected group, and this group of players. I just don't think they're going out this way. So I just think that
I don't
this group is really, I think, come back strong, and I think they're going to figure it out.
All right. I would like four courtside. So get that set up for me.
Talk to Charlie Swanson. You know, like there's a lot of guys you know. I mean, he's got Rosie over there. I think Jeff needs to be on Charlie's list.
I know Charlie.
Charlie's a great guy. And so anyway, hey, one other thing I was going to tell you too, how prescient of you and Dave to get that NBC theme. John Tesh lived because
he's
of you
back.
Guys.
That's it. We brought it back.
Intro and they are promoting that NBC comeback next year. And
without Dave.
You with Dave Harrigan getting that John Tesh promo on there in this little segment, I just think it's great.
That's he's got great. A massive ego already.
You're really welcome, world.
I mean, he doesn't need to have more people just tell him how amazing he is.
No, please do.
Yeah.
Exactly. Great job, Dave.
All right. I'll reach out to you later. See you, Pete.
Okay, bud. See ya.
Donald John Trump and money. Now, are you going to be in the group to say, God, we hear this every president? We hear Joe Biden, we hear Barack Obama, we hear Bill Clinton, they all end up making a lot of money while they're president. or is Trump different? Eric Lipton is excellent on this topic. He's with us next on CCO. Okay, so I set this up before, and I welcome Eric Lipton to the conversation. You can check out his excellent work, New York Times, newyorktimes.com, where money and presidents. And for some people in our audience, their opinion is going to be solely shaped by, well, I'm a Democrat, so I'm going to point the finger at Republicans, and vice versa. And we can cite a number of presidents who entered the White House at one financial level, and then when we talk about years later, they're at a different financial level. Now, how much of that happens while they're the president? That's a part of this conversation, because Eric has offered up multiple stories about Donald Trump in crypto, Donald Trump in meme coins, and still the traditional business, which in theory, if you accept what the president is saying, and I'll just admit I'm dubious, that when he says he has no contact at all with Eric Trump, his middle son who runs it, or Donald Trump Jr. I just don't believe that. Now, I think he's plenty busy, but I think this business has been his life for decade after decade after decade, so I don't think he's completely divorced from that. So, Eric, when you have spent time, and I'm sure it's been dozens and dozens of hours looking at this, and Trump and money and profiting, which aspect of this stands out the most for legitimate, fair journalism scrutiny?
I think that the issue is, first of all, that Trump benefits financially from a lot of his existing business enterprises. So while he turned over these assets to his sons back in January of 2017, when he was first elected and served his first term, he signed a document that legally assigned those assets to his two oldest sons. He continues to be the financial beneficiary of those assets. So he still personally collects revenues and profits from those businesses every year. And we see that in his annual financial disclosure report, which he is required under federal law to file either as a candidate for office or as an elected official. And so, you know, he asserts that he does not have a conflict of interest, for example, when at the Trump Doral golf course in near Miami, Florida, when the Saudis have a Live Golf sponsored tournament there, and that therefore effectively the Saudi government is bringing, you know, filling up the hotel and the restaurants and paying a fee to host that tournament. And it's funded by the Sovereign Wealth Fund of the Saudi Arabia. And so, you know, he would say, well, I don't have a conflict of interest, even though I'm talking to the Saudis about potentially giving them F-35 fighter jets or, you know, civilian nuclear technology that the United States has. And it's not influenced in any way by the fact that the Saudis, you know, are paying my family because that's my sons and not me. But in fact, the Trump Doral is producing revenue for Donald J. Trump as an individual in addition to his sons. And now, similarly, with the cryptocurrency mm-hmm. that the Trump family has set up, both the meme coin, which is selling dollar sign Trump meme coins as a collectible, or World Liberty Financial, a second cryptocurrency company, again, his sons, you know, are kind of running that operation, that business. And when I looked at the incorporation records, for example, associated with World Liberty Financial, it's, you know, Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump that are listed as the board members. But then when you look at the financial disclosure report for the limited liability corporation that Donald Jr. and Eric are running, the financial benefits again go to Donald J. Trump, the president.
Yeah.
And so Donald J. Trump is appointing the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission that sets rules around cryptocurrency. And so he is therefore effectively the chief regulator in the United States. And he is one of the biggest stablecoin and cryptocurrency operators in the world. So he is one of the most important potential regulatory targets or regulated parties.
Yes.
So he is simultaneously both the regulator and the regulated. And that is, you know, now he may not be running the cryptocurrency company, but he is a financial beneficiary of it. So those are two examples. I could go on, unfortunately, for yeah. about an hour because there are so many of
right.
them, and we've been busy writing about them. But they are everywhere I look. And there are many of them. There are more than I have ever seen. There are more than multiple presidential historians that I've spoken with have ever seen in terms of the number of personal financial benefits that the president is receiving at the same time as he is serving as president. There's more than any presidential historian that I've spoken with, people who've written books about Reagan and Ford and, you know, Republicans. They've never seen anything like this. And also, you know, there are ethics lawyers that I've spoken with that served in the Bush White House or in the Obama White House. You know, okay, there's a D and there's an R, and both of them say that they've never seen anything like this. Where there now, there have been relatives of presidents. Neil Bush was in the banking industry when George W. Bush was president, and Billy Carter was selling Billy beer, and he also was actually doing some inappropriate lobbying for the government of Libya when Jimmy Carter was president. And Hunter Biden, of course, was selling his name to all kinds of overseas parties inappropriately and unethically while his dad was vice president. And then when his dad was president, he was selling artwork to a private citizen who, you know, had some political connections to the party and in a way that was suspicious and probably inappropriate. But those are kind of trivial by comparison to what we've seen. The government of the United Arab Emirates just about a week ago announced that it was committing $2 billion worth of stablecoin tokens to World Liberty Financial, $2 billion. And now, you know, I mean, if Hunter Biden was selling his paintings, I mean, maybe, you know, we're talking like tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of dollars. Or if he was working for China or for, you know, Ukraine or various parties overseas, we're talking like, you know, pennies compared to, you know, again,
scale,
inappropriate.
Eric, scale matters.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So that's the thing that we're observing. I mean, when the government of the United Arab Emirates puts $2 billion into World Liberty Financial and suddenly overnight makes it into one of the largest stablecoin issuers in the world, and World Liberty Financial therefore can invest that $2 billion and it takes the yield. So it's like it takes the yield from that savings account and that's its revenue and profits.
Yeah.
And so therefore the money that the United Arab Emirates put into the Trump family's business is generating tens of millions of dollars of yield annually that benefit the Trump sons and their father. That appears to be a real conflict of interest when he is about to fly over to the Middle East and meet with the leaders of Saudi Arabia and Qatar and United Arab Emirates to talk about, you know, weapons and peace matters and, you know, and potential technology transfers. Is that influenced? Is that not influenced by the fact that they have a personal financial relationship to him? That's an unusual question to have to be thinking about with respect to an American president. But that's the question we now face.
This is Eric Lipton from The New York Times. You can hear his knowledge on this topic and the amount of work he and his team have done. So let's just stay with crypto. I want you to expand on how the president just dramatically changed his view on crypto, that before was dismissing it, really was acting like he didn't know anything about it, was old school as he is in so many ways, you know, of this is how it was in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and we're not going to change, and how he came to it. And then because so much of this country is still confused by crypto, who has it, what's legit, where are the regulations, how that maybe has played a part when the conversation has not risen to the level that it may have if it was a financial concept that more of the public readily understood.
Yeah, I mean, crypto is very complicated, and it's one of the challenges that we face as reporters. My colleagues, David Yaffe Bellany and Ban Protest and others, as we write about this, and we try to write about it in terminology that is easy to understand, and we actually included definitions in one of our recent pieces so that there are terms like a stable coin or a meme coin that as you're reading the story, we have actually sort of like a dictionary of what these different terms mean. But, you know, Trump himself had called cryptocurrency the kind of the venue of drug dealers and money launderers, and it's, you know, not real money, and it's not something I want to be involved with. And that was just a few years ago. And then he was running for re-election, and you know, Trump is a very perceptive guy, and he saw that there were millions of dollars of campaign contributions that were there for the taking if he embraced crypto, and he did embrace it. And he began to receive large checks from the cryptocurrency industry, which was very frustrated with Joe Biden and the aggressive regulatory structure that they had adopted, which was filing lawsuits against, you know, almost 100 different cryptocurrency companies during the 4 years that Biden was president. There were different litigations filed by the Securities and Exchange Commission. They were really frustrated. It was significantly curtailing the growth of the industry, and they wanted a new leader who was basically going to smash the SEC. And Trump started to say that he would do just that. He would dismiss the chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission, and he you know, made these promises, and he got, you know, millions and millions of dollars in campaign contributions, and then he was elected, and among the first things he did was appoint a new acting chairman and now a permanent chairman at the SEC. And one of the first things they did was dismiss most of those pending cases.
Right.
And they actually gave a pardon to Arthur Hayes, who'd been convicted of Bank Secrecy Act violations and was pending, had to pay a $10 million fine that was about to be due. And it turns out Arthur Hayes, of course, is a partner of World Liberty Financial. So, you know, and so he gives a pardon to Arthur Hayes just before his $10 million payment for restitution is due. And he shuts down, you know, he puts on hold or shuts down the SEC case involving Tron and Justin Sun, who's put $75 million into World Liberty. So, I mean, that is an unambiguous conflict of interest. I mean, that is, there's nothing, there's no apparent conflict of interest. That is a conflict of interest.
Without a doubt.
And we don't see that many like that in presidential history.
Eric, you laid it out extraordinarily well. I'm following your work. It's absolutely worth paying attention to. I appreciate your time. We'll reach out to you again down the line. Thank you so much for coming
Great.
On.
Yeah, please. I urge people to read these stories. I mean, there's a massive amount of labor involved, and you know, you only get accountability if people are informed.
Yes.
And they talk about it, and they you know, you need to be informed. And I, you know, a lot of people are just sort of turning away from this because they're either, you know, they love Trump or they hate Trump, and they just are turning away. But I just think it's super important, you know, love him or hate him, please be informed. And we are working extremely hard. We actually have reporters who are deployed around the world. And we are, you know, this is our job. And believe me, it's exciting and interesting work, but it's a lot of work. But we're committed to bringing transparency to these things. So I would just ask people to consider reading these stories, because I think that we all want to be informed, and that's the way that democracy works, is if you are an informed citizen. So please consider, you know, reading these stories and sharing them and talk about them and make up your own minds. But we're just going to, you know, present the information as we see it.
I echo every single word you just said. I'm going to expand on it when we come back. Thank you again for your time. Keep working.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Eric Lipton from the New York Times. Could not agree more with the last part on consuming information, seeking out further information. And I want to pick up on that, but I want you to react to what Eric had to say about his work and his last comments. Text me, 651-461-9226. Okay, I'm talking Stretch Lab here.
Okay.
Yeah, I was bending my knees pretty good there, wasn't I?
Yeah, that was not a great stretch. You can do better.
Any better?
I think you need somebody to help you out.
A little better up on the side. A little better. I still got that side issue. I need to go to Stretch Lab. I might even call Stretch Lab during the break, because I got a little bit of time before we're going to get some food and some music. I could go to the one by the lakes, not too far
away.
You'd
feel a lot better after the concert tonight, standing up for those 8 hours of Sparkle Sturgeon.
Yeah, I'm not going to be standing for all 8 hours of the Sparkler, but I am going to be standing for plenty at the Armory. And, I mean, I'm 180 years old, so I want to feel a little better. I want to actually maybe hold a golf club again when this intercostal muscle. I may have the intercostal muscles removed. Apparently, you need them to breathe. I'm not sure.
Nah.
Stretch Lab has been helping me out with the side. Some of the side here just has to heal hamstrings, tight, glutes, tight, a little rotator cuff issue, whatever you might have, and you might think you have nothing. So stay ahead of the game. You might have a significant problem. Let them work with you. 11 locations, trained specialists. Hit that golf ball a little bit further. See that? I knocked my papers on the ground. I was so enthusiastic about it. That's all the swinging I can do right now. Run a little quicker. I like all the folks there, and they're very good at what they do. StretchLab.com.